From La Trobe to Port Allegheny, State College to Winbur, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a new fiscal year is underway in Pennsylvania, and lawmakers have adjourned for a long summer recess. David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew are here to take a closer look at the new state budget. And efforts to restore confidence and integrity in Pennsylvania's election system have been vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf, who continues to foster the big lie that secure elections violate voting rights. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A new investigative report by Broad and Liberty has analyzed COVID-19 deaths in Pennsylvania nursing homes and long-term care facilities. It's found the second wave of the pandemic last winter was even more deadly to residents of those facilities than was the initial wave in the spring of 2020. Despite an outcry and heavy criticism of the Wolf administration's policies and failure to adequately respond to the crisis in long-term care facilities during the pandemic's initial wave, the second spike in COVID-19 deaths was larger and more sustained. According to Broad and Liberty, deaths in such facilities in Pennsylvania far outpaced the national average, despite the disproportionate number of overall deaths in the state occurring in long-term care facilities. Wolf and former Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine continued to focus on lockdowns and other measures aimed at the overall population. In total, Pennsylvania ranked third in the nation, behind only Kentucky and Georgia, in the number of nursing home deaths per 100 residents. You can read the complete report at broadandliberty.com. With open seats for both governor and U.S. senator, the list of candidates entering the 2022 primaries continues to grow. The latest official entry into the U.S. Senate race is Republican Carla Sands. Sands served as U.S. ambassador to Denmark during the Trump administration. The Cumberland County resident was the chairman and CEO of Vintage Capital Group. She also practiced chiropractic medicine. Sands joins Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos, combat veteran and author Sean Parnell, and former GOP congressional nominee Kathy Barnett in seeking the Republican nomination to succeed retiring U.S. Senator Pat Toomey. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's new state budget was passed on time and with less drama than in past years. It included a massive increase in state spending, but also tucked away some money in a rainy day fund. Here to take a look at the budget details is our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Jeremy Baker from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David.
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your all-star panel, Jeremy Baker, Political Director for Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Jeremy, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here, David.
And as ever, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be back, David. Thank you.
All right. So we live to tell the tale. We have survived another Pennsylvania state budget process. And as we look at what they have wrought, what they have brought to bear, wanted to get your thoughts on where we stand. And I guess the first thing that really strikes me is the enormity of the total spend, that Pennsylvania's general fund budget for the first time ever now eclipses $40 billion. That's $40,000 million. So the economy has been, you know, awash in all of the federal stimulus dollars, a direct aid to the states, but also the reverberations of all of the personal money that was given And that's been reflected in, you know, in sales tax and in lottery proceeds and all those sorts of things. I'm very concerned about whether or not that is a sustainable number. So, Jeremy, we'll just start right there. Can we live with a $40 billion budget?
Well, I think the number you have to look at, David, is what is the increase in growth year after year? You know, a term that gets thrown out is, you know, TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, Taxpayer Protection Act.
Right.
The increase in the budget should be what the people of Pennsylvania see in income increases, in inflation, in population growth,
right,
to serve the needs of Pennsylvanians.
Right.
That number this year was about 1.79% growth. It should have been about a $600 million increase in the budget from last year. It was an 8.8% increase, a $3.2 billion increase.
Ugh.
That's unsustainable. It's been unsustainable. And the IFO already predicts we're at a $2.5 billion shortfall next year.
Yeah, the Independent Fiscal Office, which is the legislative branch's go-to expert on this. And so, I mean, Rebecca, the, you know, sort of good news, bad news. I mean, the bad news is that the total spend is dizzyingly high, but I guess the good news is that with all of the federal money that was in Harrisburg, they didn't spend it all. That they did tuck away some of it, at least to pay for next year's budget. Is that your take?
Yeah, they did not spend it all, and kind of Jeremy's sort of looking at the, you know, dark side of the coin. I'm going to try to flip the coin over and sort of look at the bright side
a little bit.
Although I completely agree that that's an unsustainable budget number, and I really worry about the rate of growth that Jeremy talked about. Let's go back to the beginning of budget season back in February when Governor Wolf announced his budget plans. He was proposing an increase in the minimum wage to $15 an hour, legalizing recreational marijuana, raising the personal income tax for most Pennsylvanians, which, as we've talked about before, affects small businesses too.
Right, right.
And he was asking for over $1 billion in new education spending. None of those things happened in this budget. And
right.
Thank goodness. We're glad about that. He did get an increase in education spending. I think it was about $300 million, but it was nowhere near the $1.3 billion he was asking for, which is good news.
It's not about the spend. It's about the results that you get from the spending. And to just like shovel more money into the gaping maw of the education establishment, that is in no way related to the quality of the educational experience that our students get. So spending more money to spend more money is a mistake. Getting more value out of the dollars already being spent, which are at historic highs, like that's the goal. So we're not opposed to education spending per se. We just want the results that should come from spending at that rate.
Totally agree. And there is no better year to talk about that than after the pandemic year when our public schools were closed and a lot of our parents chose to send their kids to private schools. So it's a great point to make. I totally agree. And I think just from a larger perspective of the total amount of spend, we've talked about this in the past on the show, too, about how there is a correlation between, you know, an inverse correlation between the more government spends and private sector activity and economic growth in the economy.
Yes.
So as Jeremy's talking about this rate of increase, the higher that rate of increase is and the more our government is spending in our economy, the less our economic development and the less our economy is going to grow, the less you know, good our businesses are going to do out in the economy and our people are going to, you know, spend money. And we know that we are losing people as a commonwealth to states that have better tax structures and where people can actually keep more of their money.
When state government spends money faster than people can earn it, it suffocates growth. And that this is why, you know, Jeremy, as we have argued for so many years now, that having a cap of some kind, a real world limit on how much the government can grow, how much more it can take out of the private economy, that this is just a first step. A fundamental first step towards enacting the kind of fiscal discipline that will make possible future economic growth so that 10 years from now that we don't lose another U.S. House member.
Right. We should be talking about what we can do in Pennsylvania so that we gain congressional seats, so that we gain population. You look at our neighbors, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, going past New York to Connecticut. Those are all lost states where people have left for greener pastures. Why can't that be Pennsylvania? Right. Why do we have to be part of that list of states that people are fleeing because of terrible regulatory climates, terrible tax structures? Let's fix the things that we can fix if Pennsylvania is a growth state. And you know, we talk about the drivers of our current budget. Human services, 11% increase over last year. That's unsustainable. A quarter of our population is on Medicaid right now. Mm. It's unsustainable for us to continue without any kind of limits on who is eligible, caps on what they can claim. And we had an $850 million overrun from last year's budget. It was baked into this year. That's not included in the TP in the percent of growth. And that's going to happen next year again. We're talking billion-dollar overspends year in and year out. You had superintendents going to lawmakers this year and saying, why are you giving us more money? They've got $4.5 billion in reserve funds. They've got billions of dollars directly from the federal government. Why do we need to pump more money to schools that were closed last year?
Correct.
When they only gave to the tax credit scholarship programs that go to students who desperately need better education. They only increased that by $40 million. I mean, there's 50,000 students on waiting lists currently that they could have solved that with $100 million. That's a drop in the bucket of a $40 billion budget. $100 million is a drop in the bucket. And that would have rescued 50,000 kids from poverty, from being on the streets, from not being in schools that taught them.
How we get through this budget this year and next year, that's going to determine what sort of situation the new governor takes up in January of 2023.
And we've played this game before when former governor Ed Rendell overspent by $1 billion directly to, of one-time money to schools that then when Tom Corbett took over, he was left holding the tab. We cannot set the next governor up for that kind of fall.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Jeremy Baker from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
And I think Jeremy talks about that budget hole that Governor Corbett was left with. And I think the legislature, when they passed this budget, actually cited that as not wanting to repeat that mistake again. So we talked earlier about how they didn't spend the whole $10
billion. Right.
They did put $2.5 billion away into the rainy day fund. And they're saving $5 billion for future budgets, for the next 2 year budget of 2 years of budgets. So hopefully that will prevent that issue from happening again. I hope that money is spent wisely in the coming years. But that, I think, was designed to actually prevent that scenario from happening again.
Right.
I mean, they put $1.2 billion of temporary of federal money into Medicaid that they're going to have to replace next year. So there's half of the savings already gone in one-time funds.
So these are the challenges that we face. And, in the absence of wise leadership that looks to the horizon, we're going to be cobbling together, these kinds of solutions rather than having a master plan. We should be, we should be doing the things. It's like, I want to lose weight, but I don't want to exercise. I'll try to just do it by dieting. It's like, no, you got to do all the things together to be healthy. And it was a typical Harrisburg sort of work product, and recognizing the limitations of our circumstances, there were a few positive glimmers in there. And one of the things that PMA was most pleased about was that the budget included authorization for the Independent Fiscal Office to deploy dynamic scoring, dynamic modeling in future tax policy changes. And so, this is the recognition that there's a difference between tax rates and tax collections, and that depending on, changing policy, it'll change people's behavior. And so, this is a way to, to give lawmakers more information about how positive changes in tax policy would change behavior that would actually increase activity that would yield greater collections. And so IFO now has those tools and has permission to use them. And so that is a win for pro-growth economics.
That is a definite win. The dynamic scoring issue is a big one, and that will really help us. And as you were talking, Dave, about, you know, we've kind of given up on this governor. So for the next year or so, I think this is a perfect opportunity to put together a list of the things that we would like to see the next governor tackle, mm-hmm. and things that would increase economic growth. So I think that having that dynamic scoring that with IFO will really help that, because it will allow us to know exactly what the impact will be on for instance, targeted tax changes that will help growth. So I think that is a really good, you know, sort of predecessor to moving forward with some more pro-growth policies here in the future. So let's start putting the list together.
Most definitely. And you know, there are things that are obvious, like, you know, the Office of the Repealer to have some kind of systematic review of the rules that are on the books and regulations to say, look, did it do what we wanted it to do? Do we still need it? You know, if it didn't work, can we get rid of it? And it's like the fact that nobody ever goes back to look at whether things functioned the way that they were supposed to, whether they caused more trouble than they were worth, whether they worked and we don't need them anymore. Like, to have an entity that's actually responsible for that and to do it in a systematic way would be a huge positive change.
An independent entity, because as you know now, there is someone put in charge of reviewing regulations on a regular basis, and that's the agency that has the regulations.
Proverbial fox and hen house situation, yes.
Exactly. So having an independent review.
Right. And we, you know, one thing we talk about, and you know, you talk about specifically because you're a member of CDIS, Dave, is our corporate income tax is at points the highest, you know, was at points the highest in the world.
Yeah.
It's, you know, third in the nation or fourth in the nation.
It's the highest flat rate in the, I think New Jersey might be above us now, but again, it's a prohibitively high flat rate that starts on dollar one. And when you combine that with, you know, runaway lawsuit abuse, regulatory overkill, you know, all these things compound one another, and you know, we got to start someplace, and you know, going after the, you know, the big negative, the sticker shock, like that would be a great place to begin.
And a dynamic modeling gives us the capacity to sell that in a public policy debate on why this is a good thing for Pennsylvania, because inevitably anyone running a corporate income tax cut will be faced with the various accusations that come along with such fun policy debates.
So, Rebecca, tell us about some of the things involving transportation that were in this budget.
Well, there is line item for transportation that would spend $279 million in federal funds on road and bridge construction. And that was designed to make up for the loss in fuel tax revenue that PennDOT experienced last year. The appropriation that they have here does not, from what I understand, actually make up for the full cost of the fuel tax revenue. So I expect that there will be some consideration of, you know, transportation funding at some point in the future. I know the legislature is a little frustrated right now that the governor's office, well, PennDOT in particular, has decided to move forward with tolling bridges. They just put out an RFQ last week for a about $2.2 billion bridge tolling initiative that would toll 9 interstate bridges in the state. And that's a pretty big number. We're arguing that such a big, essentially a tax on, you know, the transportation industry really should be approved by the General Assembly.
Right.
A bill passed the state Senate, which would require it to be approved by the General Assembly, but it hasn't been, you know, considered in the House yet. But nonetheless, PennDOT went ahead and put out that RFQ to get bids.
Request for quote.
Yes, sorry.
That's
request
okay.
for quote,
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, they could get bids on a $2.2 billion tax, basically, on travelers in the state.
And PennDOT coupled that with a increase in their tolls, their existing tolls right now on EasyPass and drive in license plates, correct?
The Turnpike Commission yes,
correct.
Actually did the most expensive toll road in the world.
Mm.
The Pennsylvania Turnpike just increased its tolls yet again. So the problem there is that a previous budget, like what did you say, a typical Harrisburg
maneuver
yes. deal, actually had in the past had the Turnpike Commission funding transit in the state. And that transit funding, which the Turnpike Commission is sort of saddled with right now, is has been, you know, massively stretching them very thin. So we've seen incredibly large increases in the turnpike tolls in the past couple of years. And that's unfortunately going to continue again this year until that issue is fixed.
Yeah. There was one other sort of bit of relief for the employer community in that the governor's extremely onerous overtime rule was repealed. And so that was something that I know that our friends at the Pennsylvania Chamber had worked very hard on because, you know, again, that for people who are salaried employees that, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, freed from those burdens. And so the classifications that were in place captured, you know, people who otherwise would have been, you know, would have been just full-time professionals.
Yeah, I mean, what it would force businesses to do would be to choose to fire employees, cut hours, and ultimately hurt the freedom of an employer and an employee to interact and find the best solutions for both parties. And we saw this struck down at the federal level. Tom Wolf, you know, decides to ignore court rulings and do it himself. And, you know, thankfully, the legislature was able to remove this onerous burden on businesses. And, you know, now we can look forward to other negotiations on key initiatives to help businesses flourish here in PA.
But Rebecca, back to your point, you couldn't possibly be more right that this is the time when, you know, everybody who wants a more prosperous Pennsylvania and a brighter future and a growing population and, you know, a Pennsylvania where you don't have to buy a plane ticket to visit your grandkids, this is the time for us to be marshaling all of those plans that will make the kind of systematic changes that you know, that Pennsylvania needs so that we can be, you know, one of the high-performing states, that it's not good enough that we're, you know, slightly less bad than New York and New Jersey. So anyway, please, you know, for the listeners, please, you know, keep coming back in the months and years ahead. Unfortunately, we're down to the last of our time here. Jeremy, where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
You can find us at thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to find out more about you?
And they can find us at pmta.org.
That's for the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
You got
and
it.
As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and Jeremy and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. As with many of our nation's institutions, faith in our election system has been badly shaken. Real or not, a substantial segment of the American electorate believes or suspects that there was significant voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Pennsylvania has been at the epicenter of this distrust, and Governor Tom Wolf deserves much of the blame. The erosion of confidence in our elections began in 2016 when, in shock over the upset victory of Donald Trump, the left began perpetrating a four-year lie that Russian collusion was somehow responsible for influencing the election outcome. Those claims dogged Trump throughout his term, even though they were disproven at every turn. Determined not to let Trump win another term in the White House, the left did what it always does when it can't win. It changed the rules. Taking full advantage of the COVID pandemic gripping the nation, many states, including Pennsylvania, changed election rules with little heed given to ballot security. When irregularities surfaced, the left, ably aided by its legacy media allies, immediately went to work shutting down any effort at verifying the results. The president's legal teams proved to be largely inept, thus the courtroom maneuvering never lived up to his rhetoric, further advantaging the left's arguments that election fraud was a, quote, big lie. Rather than seek to verify the tally, the brick wall erected by the left has resulted in tens of millions of Americans viewing the Biden presidency as illegitimate. Worse, confidence in our electoral process has been shaken to the core. The time has come to make sure this never happens again. That is what states across the country are working to do. To further solidify the rule changes that have led to the current crisis, the left sought to federalize election law. This resulted in an attempted power grab by congressional Democrats who proposed the For the People Act, more appropriately, the Corrupt Politicians Act, to take election law away from the states. It was blatantly unconstitutional, and U.S. Senate Republicans successfully blocked the measure. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court of the United States at the end of June issued a ruling upholding an Arizona statute that prohibits anyone other than a close relative or caregiver from collecting mail-in ballots. That essentially outlaws ballot harvesting, which is the unlimited and unsecure collection of multiple ballots by a third party. The court also found that another measure designed to prevent fraud, requiring a voter to vote in the precinct in which he or she is registered, was also constitutional. The left labels any effort at ballot security as the trampling of voting rights. That, of course, is absurd, as prudent measures to ensure the electorate is composed only of live people voting once is necessary for there to be confidence in the outcome. Here in Penns Woods, frequent and inconsistently applied election rules issued by the Wolf administration contributed to Election Day confusion and the destruction of public trust in the 2020 elections. To address the problem, lawmakers in the State House held a series of 10 hearings to learn what went wrong and consider potential reforms. The result was the Pennsylvania Voting Rights Protection Act. The act provided for early in-person voting, the formal legal recognition and regulation of ballot drop boxes, 5 additional days of time for county election bureaus to tabulate mail-in ballots, the protection of voting rights for handicapped and older Pennsylvanians, enhanced voter identification requirements, and historic amounts of funding for election administration. The act was passed by the legislature and sent to Governor Tom Wolf, who vetoed it. Thus does the governor continue his complicity in undermining confidence in our electoral system by failing to take common sense and widely supported reforms needed to streamline the system and ensure a secure process. Wolf is contributing to what is the actual big lie in the election debate, that fair and secure elections are somehow a violation of voting rights. Our representative republic cannot properly function if we, the people, do not have confidence that those whom we elect to represent us arrive in office by legitimate means. Tom Wolf, through word and deed, both before and after the 2020 election, has prevented Pennsylvania from arriving at a point where our elections are both secure and accessible. The legislature must now go back to the drawing board to craft new laws and use the constitutional amendment process to restore confidence in our elections. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years now, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WLSW-FM and WQTA-AM in Connellsville, along with WFRM-AM in Countersport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.